You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. Reporting remotely for WFHB, this is Don Guerra.
And I'm Alex Dieterer. This is the WFHB local news for Monday, June 7th, 2021.
Later in the program, we have a few minutes with the mayor, a weekly segment where we pose questions to Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton on community-related issues. More coming up in today's feature reports.
Also coming up in the next half hour, last week, the Monroe County Commissioners approved a contract with consulting firm Baker Tilly to review and analyze the City of Bloomington's fiscal plan for annexation. More in today's headlines. But first, your local news brief.
From WFHB, this is the local news brief for Monday, June 7th. I'm Katherine Patterson. Monroe County continues to be at high risk for the 59% of the population that isn't vaccinated. A majority of the new people being vaccinated are in the preteen and teenager age group. However, the CDC is trying to push for young adults to get the vaccine. Uber and Lyft are giving rides free of charge to vaccine sites until the 4th of July. The Cedars Preserve has been closed to the public due to the harmful impact that human traffic has caused on the wildlife and plants. The decision made by Sycamore Land Trust was made because of the increase in human activity due to COVID-19. Human traffic has caused the erosion of trails, loss of vegetation, and the formation of unauthorized paths. With Indiana University not requiring documentation for students and faculty being vaccinated, IU is incentivizing documentation to be reported. From June 7th to June 28th, students that show documentation for their vaccine will be put in a raffle to receive $500, IU dining benefits, parking passes, gift cards, vouchers, and more. Faculty and staff could win an Apple Watch, AirPods Pro, a JBL speaker, and a Yeti cooler. In total, over $70,000 in prizes will be distributed to students, faculty, and staff for their cooperation. That's all for your local news. For WFHB, I'm Katherine Patterson.
At the June 4th coronavirus press conference, Vice President of Strategic Partnerships at Indiana University, Kirk White, discussed changes to the university's vaccination requirement. He clarified that students, faculty, and staff will still be required to have the vaccine to attend IU, but the need for documentation has changed.
This past week, we did announce, and I'm so pleased that IU Health joined us, that we've both been able, as two of the largest employers in Indiana, to have a vaccine requirement. Indiana University is holding firm with that requirement, and all of our faculty, staff, and students will be required to have the vaccine for fall semester. What we adjusted this week had to do with the documentation.
Indiana University Health President Brian Shockney said IU Health employees need to be fully vaccinated by September 1st. He added the company would honor employees who are not immunized but still receive their final shot before the deadline.
We need to have them vaccinated, fully vaccinated by September 1st. That is to say, though, if someone were to get their final vaccine prior to that date, we would certainly honor that. But that, just like any other deadline, you have to set the date, right? And so that is the date that we want to work toward.
Indiana University spokesperson Chuck Carney stated that a coronavirus press conference is planned for June 11th, but hinted that a non-weekly schedule may be in the works.
During last Wednesday's meeting, the Monroe County Commissioners approved a contract with consultant Baker Tilly US to review and analyze the City of Bloomington's effort to annex roughly 10,000 acres of Monroe County land. Baker Tilly is a public accounting and consulting firm based in Chicago. According to county commissioners, the amount paid to Baker Tilly should not exceed $50,000. During the meeting, County Attorney Jeff Cockrell presented the agreement to review and analyze the City of Bloomington's fiscal plan for annexation.
This agreement
And I would ask that when you approve it subject to the legal department review, because we are still working on some of the contractual language for that. Essentially, this is to have the fiscal plan of the city reviewed regarding annexation. They have a 45-day timeline that they think that this work will need to be done in, and that would put it at mid-July right now. And the public hearing is scheduled for August 4th. So we really want to fast track this, but we want to make sure it's done correctly and accurately. It is that $50,000 is a not to exceed amount for what is considered the base work, which is essentially, we asked them to provide an additional quote for on a per meeting basis, so that we could have meetings with townships in the townships, you know, with the people who are in the annexed areas, as well as other members of the public who are interested. Those are an additional cost, depending on whether it's live or via Zoom or some other platform. That would be an additional cost of between $4,000 and $7,000 per meeting. So that is not included in that not to exceed $50,000 amount. So I guess at this point, we'd ask that you guys approve it based upon our ability to get all the legal terms situated.
Local journalist Dave Askins of the B-Square Beacon asked about the impact on existing property owners that live within current city limits. Cockrell said that the Baker-Tilley report should cover the impact on residents who pay city taxes, but that the analysis would not be finished prior to the August 4th annexation meeting.
Well, I can tell you with our discussions with Baker-Tilley so far, we've not really broached the current city resident angle. I think that we've focused primarily on those who are in the annexed area, plus those who are in the townships that are going to have annexation occur within them, to kind of see what that does to their property taxes. I would defer to the commissioners if they think that this additional step is necessary. I would be surprised if it didn't raise the price a little bit, but I can certainly talk to them and see if that's something that's already included and they're already thinking about. Clearly, if they're doing a parcel by parcel analysis of the annexed area, I think they've already got a lot of work on their plate, and I can ask, but my fear would be that adding this work would extend the time frame. And again, in order for this report to be meaningful, we need to have it well before that August 4th deadline.
Jim Shelton, member of the Monroe County Redevelopment Commission, expressed concern on how annexation will impact the county's tax increment financing, or TIF.
As you know, I'm one of your appointees to the County Redevelopment Commission. And I invite you and this company to please take a look sooner rather than later at the impact on the TIFs. The city report says it's some $300,000. They say that there is a separate spreadsheet that explains this. And it turns out there is no such spreadsheet either in the report or even in existence, apparently. And because we're doing infrastructure projects, if this impact is severe enough to make us reconsider something we're doing, we need to know it now, because we've got two major projects going where we're acquiring right away right now. So we're spending money. And if it turns out that we can't afford to do one of them, we need to know it long before this thing is ever over. So please have them take a look at that. The city has agreed, and Mr. Cockrell knows all this because he was the agent who made it happen. The city has agreed to come send representatives to our next meeting in a couple weeks and to talk about a number of things, and that'll be one of them. And I'm sure you've heard that their map for Area 1A is wrong. It shows they're annexing the old GE site owned by Cook, which is takes up about half of one of our TIFs. So if you guys can get that resolved sooner, before the 45 days, and feed us that information to Mr. Cockrell, that'd be great.
The city plans to host public hearings regarding annexation on August 4th. Then the Bloomington Council will vote on annexation proposals in September. For more information on Bloomington annexation, visit co.monroe.in.us.
At the June 3rd Monroe County Election Board meeting, Monroe County Election Supervisor Karen Wheeler gave an update on the voter list maintenance postcard rollout. She said there have been some errors with the first waves of cards, but that corrected cards have already been mailed.
There was a couple glitches from the state. The first one was there was 16,351 voters who did not have their suffix on their name. For instance, the junior and the senior got left off. Sounds like a lot of voters, but really 16,000 is across the state, not from Monroe County. It's for the whole state. So it's a pretty low number. And there's a way to fix that. They actually have resent that card out, and on there is marked corrected name in red, and that will be their first card, even though it's their second one. The first card had been resent, and there's that correction. But with that, if John Sr. and John Jr. lived in the same house, they wouldn't know which card or who that belonged to. And if they're confused by it all, just give us a call and we will help them through that. Or they can wait, and they should have already gotten the second card of the first card. It gets kind of confusing. And then there was another little mishap, smaller amount. There was 2,366 voter registration cards that were sent out missing fields in their name. So for instance, maybe I got one sent to me, it'd be just Karen Ann, and it didn't have the Wheeler, but there was a name in the field missing. They also got those cards resent, and they also have, in red, corrected name printed on there.
Board Chair Caroline Vandewill asked Wheeler what residents should do if they have not received a VLM card. Wheeler clarified that they should call the voter registration office. She added that residents who receive a card with someone else's name on it should return those cards to the sender.
Vice President of Design at Smith Design Group, Katie Stein, presented preliminary plans for a subdivision to the Ellettsville Plan Commission on June 3rd. She said the property would be broken up into 20 lots that are mostly single-family homes.
We are proposing to subdivide this property into 20 lots. 14, like Kevin said, will be single family lots on the north side. We'll have three commercial lots on the south, adjacent to State Road 46. Two lots in the middle are proposed, not with this petition, but they are proposed to be multifamily lots. And then we have one lot that is open area, common area, that is shown here on this screen.
Commissioners showed concern about the subdivision putting a strain on traffic. Commissioner Dan Swofford questioned attorney for the petitioner, Greg Lauer, whether the petitioner would be seeking an additional exit from the neighborhood. Lauer said the petitioner is seeking permission to build a connection to Centennial Drive, but isn't counting on it.
I tell you that we would prefer to have that versus not having it, but I don't think we're in a position where we can wait around until Kreider's group makes a decision one way or the other. But yes, it does make our property more marketable from the standpoint of having that additional ingress egress. We're not through with it. I just don't think we're going to get anywhere in the near future.
Commissioner Terry Baker moved to approve the plan. Commissioner David Drake pointed out that the plan commission was obligated to approve it by right. Commissioner Pat Wizolowski voted yes, but added the plan commission should have more power to address concerns like traffic congestion.
I think we have to do something with this exit on 46 before we approve anything else. Something's got to be done there, people. Like the neighbor said there, you know, people are going to get hurt, they're going to get killed, and we're going to sit back and say, well, we had nothing to do about it. And I just can't believe that a planning commission cannot have some type of authority about traffic.
Commissioners voted to approve the lots 4-2, with Commissioners Sandra Hash and Pamela Samples dissenting. Commissioner Don Calvert abstained.
Now it's time for A Few Minutes with the Mayor, a weekly segment where WFHB Assistant News Director Jake Jacobson poses questions to Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton on community-related issues. We turn to Jake Jacobson for more.
Each week, community members and volunteers at WFHB pose questions for Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton about local current events. Today, on A Few Minutes with the Mayor, Mayor John Hamilton answers some of those questions. The last time we talked, you had mentioned the Bloomington Convention Center, presumably the sort of expansion process, but you kind of talked about it in maybe uncertain terms. do you feel like that project is ever going to come together? How are you feeling on the fate of the Bloomington Convention Center, I guess, so to speak?
Well, the Convention Center is in an uncertain space right now. I'm concerned about it. I continue to believe that a big part of Bloomington's future is going to be people visiting our community. We're a destination place, both for business and commerce and arts and entertainment and sports and conventions. And but it's unclear right now. Obviously, the pandemic changed the convention business during the pandemic. But I think it's time to revisit and study, and there's conversations beginning about where do we want to be in the coming years. And one thing to note about an expansion is it's basically probably a four-year project from when you decide to go forward to when it's completed, 3 or 4 year. So there's a lot of lead time, and that's the kind of planning that we need to be doing right now.
I feel like the pandemic is probably kind of an obvious setback here, as it has been for so many things. How much do you think the decision to take some of that food and beverage tax money and put it back into the community, how big of an impact do you feel like that made on the convention center conversation in general? Or do you feel like that was maybe not as big to the overall conversation as it could be?
Well, I think that the pandemic was the reason that the consideration of the convention center here and all around the country, people were thinking about what's the impact. They you know, their business went down to zero basically for quite a few months, starting to pick back up. The food and beverage tax was very useful to have, and it was used significantly to help lend money and grant some money to organizations that were struggling, who had a relationship to convention or visitor business, entertainment business and such. So that was really a godsend in many ways that we were able to provide that support. That does not diminish our financial capacity to do the convention center going forward. It really just meant we had some capacity to do some quick short-term steps. But, you know, I think at the city level, we're still very interested in exploring the convention center. It's a question whether the county is or not. I'm not sure. They're still kind of musing that, debating that, I think. But it is time, in my view, to move that project forward with a real study and look, discussion among folks about what we might do in the future with that.
Let's sort of stay on the topic of the county. This is a question that came from another reporter at the station. They were wondering about your thoughts on the county hiring a financial consultant to review the annexation plans. And then sort of as a general follow-up, they were wondering, what would you say to a county resident who may have concerns about living in city limits?
Uh-huh. Well, I saw the news about the county hiring a consultant, and I think they did that last time, too. We certainly have made our consultant available for them to talk with and meet with, and we're happy to share all the information that we have. So I'm not exactly sure whether there's another one needed, but it's fine if they want to get a second-party view, if you will, about that. And we'll look forward to sharing all kinds of information that they learn from their consultant and what we know from ours. Look, annexation, it can be a controversial thing for people who are directly affected. The city of Bloomington has annexed hundreds of times in our history. We have not annexed over the last 17 years, which means we've built up quite a pressure behind the dam, if you will, of areas that have developed and urbanized and look pretty much like the city but aren't part of the city. And annexation is how you just continue to grow your boundaries to reflect the population. It's how a city provides the kind of parks and amenities and services and sidewalks and streets and planning and arts support and economic development support and all the things the city does, roads and police and all that. So we're going to keep talking to folks about it. You know, it's no secret that some people like to live right next to a city and enjoy the amenities of a city and want to wait as long as possible to be part of the city, to be part of the democratic and political process, as well as the economic process and the taxes that go with the city. But I think, you know, it'll work out, and we're working closely with the city and all of our counterparts in county government and other jurisdictions like school corporations to make sure this can go smoothly.
Something I have heard a lot in covering county meetings is about how much this will affect the sort of school systems specifically. Do you have anything you can say to sort of assuade the fears of people who are worried that this may sort of greatly affect local school corporations, this sort of annexation?
Sure. I mean, I'm in regular touch with the current and incoming superintendent of the schools and the school board to work very closely with them. Annexation is not meant to make life more difficult for any jurisdictions like that. It's meant to make our region stronger, our city stronger, all of our players stronger. It does have tax implications. I should say mostly because of the tax caps, which the legislature, in my belief, mistaken approach, took decade or more ago to put very arbitrary tax caps in place that mean you can lose money when you shouldn't as the assessments increase and assessed values increase. But that's kind of deep into the weeds. But we are working very closely with the school corporation. There may be some modest implications for schools, but again, you know, that happens across the state. It happens in our city. It's happened through history. This is a bit of a catch-up annexation in one bite that because of many years of not annexing, my predecessor chose not to do any annexations, and it meant that, again, we kind of have this pressure dam built up for this. So once we get through this, we should be in a good shape to move forward together, which I'm looking forward to.
So IU made an announcement last week that while they will still be requiring students to have the COVID vaccine, they will no longer be requiring them to provide proof. What are your thoughts on sort of that decision to, frankly, you know, kind of walk that back a little bit?
Well, first, let me say again how pleased and grateful I am for both Indiana University and, of course, recently IU Health also announced their plans to require vaccinations of their community members. So in IU's case, all students, faculty, and staff, and in IU Health's case, all their staff, and indeed people, anybody who's in contact with patients, whether they're staff or not. So I think IU's decision was responding to some of the feedback they got. I know they're fully committed to assuring the vast majority, in fact, requiring everybody to have a vaccine. There's some issues with state law and some pressure from state legislatures, which I think is unfortunate, and IU has been navigating how to get through all that. You know, the city under state law, as we understand the new state law, the city it's illegal for the city to require vaccinations from our staff, and I think that's very regrettable. Whatever our decision might be as we look at that, I think it should be left up to local jurisdictions, and I think the same is true for IU and IU Health. The vaccine is how we get out of this pandemic. We're still about half vaccinated in our county, maybe just a little more in terms of eligible populations. That means there are tens of thousands of unvaccinated people who are choosing not to get vaccinated, and that's really threatening their health and our community's future. One telling and important statistic is that of all the people in the hospital today in Indiana for COVID, and there are many of them, 99.6% was the latest figure, are unvaccinated people. Let me just say that again, that virtually everyone in the hospital today who's under serious threat from COVID and potential death virtually everyone is an unvaccinated Hoosier, and that's tells us that that's how you protect yourself and your family is getting vaccines. And I'm really glad that IU and IU Health have done so.
Do you have questions for Mayor John Hamilton? Send them in an email to news@wfhb.org titled Questions for the Mayor. For WFHB, I'm Jake Jacobson.
You've been listening to the WFHB Local News. Today's headlines were written by Katherine Patterson, Cade Young, and Jake Jacobson in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Jake Jacobson.
Our theme music is provided by Mark Bingham and the Social Climbers. Engineer and executive producer is Cade Young. For WFHB, I'm Don Guerra.
And I'm Alex Dieterer. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast online at WFHB.org.
You can be part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@WFHB.org.
Stay tuned for With Good Reason, coming up next on WFHB.
Listening to the WFHB Local News on WFHB Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a WFHB Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. Feel free to check out the WFHB Local News Archive at WFHB.org to find newscasts, individual stories, and catch a live feed of the WFHB Local News. We are local, longer,